Well, I actually thought of several things that I wanted to talk about a little bit today. Thank you, Daniel. I was meeting with some friends the other day, and they were talking about the different ways that we communicate with each other through Fox Creek Community, because that has a purpose. Forestream has a purpose. We're revamping Man of God, Woman of God, to communicate about those things. And then also our prayer goals or whatever. So in response to that great conversation I had with some of my friends, this is an overview of how those things fit together and how you can make use of those in keeping yourself connected. So those are back on the tables there if that interests you at all, and kind of see how those things relate together. I think we'll be talking about it. So that was one thing I wanted to follow up on. The second thing is, I don't know how you feel, when I first jumped into the book of Isaiah, and I can remember when I went into the major prophets for the first time, I thought, these major prophets are way bigger than the minor prophets. I mean, what a revelation it was. And as I waded into the book of Isaiah, you know, I knew about Isaiah 9 and Isaiah 12, Wonderful Counselor, Prince of Peace. I'd seen those verses, but I was kind of wading in for the first time, and I was going, my goodness, how am I ever going to figure this out? So, you know, I spent months looking at the book of Isaiah and trying to understand the argument of the book. And that's part of what teachers are supposed to do. We're supposed to spend the time to make it efficient for keys to unlock things. Because, you know, you might not have read the book of Isaiah for a while. I haven't until we just started this process right now. But it's like Daniel was saying, it's full of stuff that are really important. So when you wade into a book, and it's one of the reasons that we have a study guide for each one of the books of the Bible, and they all have a theme that looks like this, or a theme page that looks like this. And basically, you walk into the book of Isaiah, and you can chop it right in half. And you can go, everything in those first 39 chapters is talking about judgment from God and different nuances and aspects of it. Then the second part is the good news. So that's one thing that can be helpful, because you can go, okay, well, you know, am I really interested right now in bad news, or am I interested in good news? You know, maybe you want to understand bad news better. Maybe you have prophetic gifts and you really key off from the bad news. Or maybe you feel really hopeless right now. And so you go, well, maybe it would be good to go to the comfort part of the book, right? Okay. Well, then that's kind of level one, but it's still pretty big, right? You got 39 chapters, and then you got another 26 chapters in the other part. So I thought, well, what would help people to process this in the best possible way? And I thought, well, I'm going to go through each one of those bigger sections, and I'm going to pick out verses that correlate with everything that's going on about that message in those chapters, okay? And that's what's on that overview. Those overviews, basically, you know, I spent those 3 or 4 months studying. I came back and I spent another 6 months studying Isaiah. And as I was studying it, all of a sudden, and this is how the Bible works, by the way, you know, you just don't read it and then boom, it's there. Everything starts rising to the top because of the nature of what the Spirit does. And out of that, for me, as I read it, these verses, and so if you have no plans to read the book of Isaiah over the next week or so while we're talking about Isaiah, because we're going to go into the major prophets and we're going to be going through it as a fast clip. But maybe you have no intention. You're sitting here right now and going, Isaiah, forget it. I haven't even been in the Gospels for a while. But if you want to get like the Cliff Notes version of what the message of Isaiah is, all you have to do is look up 1, 2, 3 passages and you'll get the essence of what's in chapters 1 through 39. And then if you look up 1, 2, 3 passages, you'll get the essence of what's in the second part of Isaiah. So the idea there is that everybody has a different availability when it comes to the scriptures, and you have time availability, interest availability. Maybe you're just getting started, understanding the scriptures. This is a good way for you to do it. And anytime we go through a book, you can always, in the post, there'll be a post next week, put it up probably tomorrow, and it will be about Isaiah, and I think it's like the 45th through the Bible thing that we've done, because we started in Genesis and Job, and now we're working our way through. And as you look at that and as you consider that post, down at the bottom of it will be this overview of Isaiah. So you don't really have to go looking at all for the resources that are here. They come right to you. And painstakingly, they have been placed to where you can read them on your phone. And so you can be where you need to be, find these passages. You know, you're sitting in the car. That's one of the reasons I love my Bible app and why I like having my phone, because sometimes when I go to meet people, they're late. You know how that goes? And you're sitting there and, you know, you got 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. Really helpful. So as we approach the book of Isaiah, because we're going to clip through these now. We're going to go Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. We'll probably slap Lamentations in with Ezekiel, and we'll be talking about them pretty quickly. And that will coordinate with what we're talking about on Sunday morning to some degree. But if you're reading through, you'll find that helpful. Also, you know, we have this thing where we just give kind of an update for each day, and that's what Daniel was talking about that he sends out. And basically what I've done is I've gone through Isaiah and picked out one passage for each day. So if you have trouble getting in the Word, it literally takes you 2 minutes. And there's a premise, and there's the verses, and then I'll say something very insightful right after it. So that's one thing I wanted to explain, because I know we have newer people and also people that get overwhelmed with the idea. I mean, how long have we been going through the Bible together? Well, a long time. But, you know, I'm just as committed to going through the Bible now. In fact, even more so than I was years ago. And then not making use only of me as a teacher, but there are other teachers in our body that we try to bring in to this process of talking about what we're learning. So I actually would probably change this to Yahweh's salvation. I kind of replaced that whole Jehovah thing a while ago because I felt like Yahweh is really a better all-inclusive name for the Lord God Almighty. But I just haven't updated the overview yet. So there you go. Second thing that came to mind this week, and I heard a couple of stories of kind things that people were doing for each other. And what was neat is that I heard stories from, for lack of a better term, the younger or millennial group of people. I heard another story from the people in their 30s and 40s. And then I heard another story from people who were a little bit older. Okay? So this is what struck me is I thought I heard from kind of each generation in our group this week, and I heard stories being told. And as I thought about that, it reminded me about in Titus. I don't know if you remember this. We've studied Titus before, but five times, I think, he says, be careful to engage in good deeds, or he talks about good deeds. So in the book of Titus, it's kind of a theme that's woven through the book. He also brings it up in the book of Hebrews, talks about being careful to engage in good deeds. And then Peter also talks about it. So there you got Peter and the author to the Hebrews, whoever he was. He may have been Paul. He may have been Apollos. We don't know. And then in the book of Titus, that idea of good deeds. So I looked it up because my heart was kind of like overflowing as I was thinking about these really kind things. You know, what I liked about them is they didn't need to be done. You know, the people all could have easily skated on following through on what God was telling them to do, and they all followed through, and that was so encouraging to my heart. But I looked up the word good deeds, because you always want to go back to the original language, and it basically the idea is a beautiful action. It's a beautiful action. That's what a good deed is. So think about that moving from doing the right thing, or doing something nice, or getting that good deed done for the day. Okay, like, you know, be prepared like a good scout. Or you can look at it like, what kind of beautiful action? And thinking about that from the perspective, of course you want it to be beautiful to the person that is a recipient of it, but you also want it to be beautiful to God. And so when I think about good deeds, I think about the things that are beautiful to God. Are you with me? I know this is a lot of content, a lot of information, but now we return to where we have been. So just think about that. I wanted to say I'm grateful. I'm grateful. And I think, as I read the book of Titus again, because it's short, it's only three chapters, nothing like climbing up the hill of Isaiah. And as I reread it, looking for these passages, I thought, you know, I know a lot of people who do engage in beautiful actions. So I'm grateful for that. So I'm complimenting you. I'm grateful to be a part of a body of people who do engage in good deeds. So that was the second thing I felt like I was supposed to share with you this morning. You ready for number three? Okay, we're going to go back to where we were picking up the last couple of weeks. We've been talking about one another worship, and this has kind of been woven together. And we've been talking about building up one another and what it looks like in that Colossians passage about speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. That led us to a conversation about being invited and inviting others into the presence of God. And remember we talked about this like 2 weeks ago, and the whole idea, or maybe it was last week, I lose track. The invitation into the presence of God when we're alone. That's what Andy was talking about because he had some time to sit in a tree this week. And I don't know why he was doing it, but he was sitting in a tree. And as he did that, he was alone. And there are certain things that happen to you when you're alone that only happen when you're alone. You know, you've heard me extol the virtues of this over the years because it's not natural to be alone. We fill our life and our minds with stuff. It's human nature. But when we're alone, when we're together with another guy or another group of guys, then we invite each other into the presence of God. And then when we gather together, we have the opportunity to invite each other into the presence of God. And then also when we're in the world, we get a chance to invite other people into the presence of God. So we talked about that a little bit, which leads me to my next topic, which was on the schedule. And if you got a chance to look at the podcast for this week, because, you know, we give them to you like a whole week ahead so you have time to think about it, talking about the idea of a new song. And I mentioned this a number of months ago, but I wanted to return to it and just talk about that idea and develop it a little bit more. So I want to do that right now. I want to get focused on a new song. I realize there's been a whole bunch of stuff that we've been talking about here, but you can find it in Isaiah, curiously enough. So Isaiah 42:10, but we're not going to look at that. You can also find it in Revelation 5:10 and 14:3, but we're not going to look at those. We're going to look at Psalm 144 because, you know, you have to look at the clock and you go, I only have 16 minutes left. Otherwise, the pitchforks will come out. So turn over to Psalm 144. Actually, I actually have people that tell me, you know, you really can keep going. So I hear that actually more than this whole number, you know. Psalm 144 is a psalm I ran into a number of years ago, and it became kind of in my repertoire of songs that I sing. And it's hard for me to sing things in Hebrew, mainly because I don't know Hebrew, and Hebrew sounds kind of strange to me. If you've ever listened to people sing things in Hebrew, it's very, very different than when we sing. So this psalm, as well as a number of other psalms, have been very helpful to me because I've been able to translate them over into my own new song. Because I recognized that they were David's new song, or Korah, the sons of Korah, whichever psalm, and I was able to translate it over. And that's one of them I want to look at today and just kind of explain that process briefly, what that looks like for me, and hopefully it'll be helpful to you. Psalm 144. And I called this psalm, because I title them when I study them and go through and break them down and do my word studies and whatever, then I title them and I come back, well, what am I going to call this now that I've looked at it? And I call this Rescued Warrior. Rescued Warrior. Because that's a theme that really means something to me. Blessed be the Lord, my rock, verse 1, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. He's my loving kindness and my fortress. He's my stronghold and my deliverer. He's my shield and he in whom I take refuge. He subdues my people under me. This is King David, so he's talking about his subjects. He subdues my people under me. O Lord, and he's responding to these
several things he's just said about who he knows God to be. Oh Lord, what is man that you take knowledge of him? Or the son of man that you think of him? Man is like a mere breath. His days are like a passing shadow. Bow your heavens. Okay, so he sets up the psalm. He's explaining some of the backdrop about how he felt about God. Now he's pivoting and he's talking to God about his interactions with God, about his connection with God. And he says, bow your heavens, O Lord, and come down. Touch the mountains that they may smoke. So the idea is that God is here. God, come down and touch the mountains. When the mountains smoke, I can at least see the mountains smoking. Flash forth lightning and scatter them. Send out your arrows and confuse them. Stretch forth your hand from on high. Rescue me and deliver me out of great waters, out of the hand of aliens. And I don't think he's talking about from Mars. Whose mouths speak deceit and whose right hand is a right hand of falsehood. So this is David's appeal. He's looking at God. He's looking at his life. And he's considering himself as a warrior who needs to be rescued, and he's beginning to process his thoughts that he's having at this particular point. And what does he say? Ta-da, verse 9. I will sing a new song to you, O God. And to me, this is the pivot of this particular psalm. It's everything about why this psalm was written. It's the reason I read it and continue to read it. It's the reason why I meditate and contemplate it, because if you can't sing a new song, where would you be in the battle? Okay? Now, do you get the picture here? This is setting up what David's going to do in the midst of the battle. Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war. And he turns his eyes toward heaven and he says to God, not, well, I'm going to pick up my spear and I'm going to pick up my shield. What does he say? I'm going to pick up my harp. I'm going to pick up what I need to sing a new song to you, O God. Upon a harp of 10 strings, I will sing praises to you, who gives salvation to kings, who rescues David, his servant, from the evil sword. That's why I came up with the idea of the rescued warrior. Rescue me and deliver me out of the hand of aliens, whose mouth speaks deceit, and whose right hand is a right hand of falsehood. This is so critical to understanding spiritual life. We talk about it all the time, about being in a war, right? We were born into a war. You know, you guys have been eldridged on that. We've been taught about that. We've talked about spiritual warfare. But the reality is that we forget sometimes that we have been trained by God to be warriors, and that our best defense in being a warrior maybe isn't our sword and our shield. Maybe it's our ability to sing a new song to God. So that's kind of my logic here. Or hopefully theologic here. And then, so what's the outworking of that? So here you are, you're fighting your battle, right? God has prepared you for it. You know, maybe you're a mom and you're taking care of one or two or three kids right now. Or maybe now your kids are in their teenage years. Or maybe you're a single person and at work you can see the war all around you. You know, whatever context you're in, maybe you're a grandfather or a grandmother and you're going, my goodness, the war looks so much different to me now than it did when we were raising children. Wherever you're at, this whole idea of the war doesn't end. You know, God allows me to live till I'm 80 or 85 years old, I'm still going to be right in the middle of the war. And I still am going to be a warrior. I might only be able to do what an 80-year-old can do, but what about a spiritual 80-year-old? I mean, Moses was a spiritual 120-year-old, wasn't he? And what does it say? Though he was 120 years old, his vigor had not abated. He still had his strength. He still had the strength of God in his heart and in his mind. And so that's kind of the setup. And then
Here's the pizza de resistance here in verse 12. Yeah, I speak Italian as well. Let our sons in their youth be like grown-up plants, and our daughters like corner pillars fashioned as for the palace. Let our garners be full, or that's like our storehouses. Let our storehouses be full, furnishing every kind of produce, and our flocks bring forth thousands and ten thousands in our fields. Now, you have trouble, relating to cattle, right? But just think about your life. Just think about the things that you possess. Just think about the things that you work for in your life. That's what he's describing. Let our cattle bear without mishap and without loss. And let there be no outcry in our streets. And this is just like a beautiful, beautiful couple of lines right here. How blessed are the people who are situated like this. How blessed are they? They recognize that not only are they in a war, God has trained us to fight in that war. And these are people who have looked at that fight and they've decided that the best defense and the best offense is to sing their own new song. And in that, receive the blessing of God. Because basically what David's describing is a rich life. It's a full life where God blesses the work of your hands because he's blessing the work of your heart. How blessed are the people who are situated like this. And how blessed are the people whose God is the Lord. And implicit in a lot of these passages in the Old Testament is the idea that people are really taking their connection with God seriously. And I would tell you that what Satan wants you to do is he does not want you to take it seriously. Thank you, God. So, there you go. So, that leads me to a couple of questions. It was God, wasn't it? I'm going to do a new song. So, I want to ask you a question. When do you know? I have three questions to ask you. When do you know? How do you know when your heart is singing? Now, let's get off the idea of dun, 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 a melody line, okay? When your heart is singing, how do you know that your heart is singing? Give me some, just tell me like one word or two words when you know that your heart is singing.
I think of the verse, storing up treasures in your heart, so as a mother and a grandmother, well, I look for those opportunities to look for those.
Yeah. Yeah. So your joy is tied into those treasures, and as you see what's being stored up in your life and you look at them, it's like very motivating to make your heart sing. Good.
When I'm thinking of others, I know people make my heart sing, but then just my heart is singing, naturally thinking of others and singing myself.
Yeah. In fact, most of the time for me, outside of when I'm thinking about how blessed I am, usually my heart is singing often when I'm thinking about how God's at work and other people. So yeah, that's a good one. Somebody was waving. Yeah, there's just something about, and that's the theme of thankfulness and gratefulness is so woven all the way through the Psalms. It's woven all the way through the Scriptures. And so you know that your heart is singing on fire whenever you get that overwhelming sense of gratefulness for whatever it is. Whatever it is, you see, that's a gift from God because gratefulness comes from God. Katie?
I feel compelled to say something to someone.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how that happened? You feel compelled. And, you think about how often, is that a one L or two? You think about how often Paul talks about that. Paul talks about the love of Christ constrains me. And basically what he says is it takes me off from the minors and it puts me onto the majors and it compels me to move forward. Good. Andy?
I was gonna say it motivates me to do something, so it draws my heart where I need to look for God, to do for others. So that compels me.
Have you ever had a situation where it comes up, you need to respond to it, and you have literally no desire whatsoever to follow through on it? You know, your flesh is weak. You sit there and you go, I don't want to do this. I'm actually sorry I became aware of it. But then you determine that God tells you to move, and you begin to move, and all of a sudden you realize that the Spirit is with you in accomplishing, and it's incredibly motivating because it's not only motivating here, it's motivating here, and it pushes you forward. Andre. Yeah, especially when you can sense God speaking through you, and you realize that it's not really about you. It never was, except we are God's hands and we are God's feet in the world. Yeah, okay, Lisa, you get to be the last one. Yeah, because you sense the reciprocal. When I use the word connecting, that's what I'm thinking of, is that, and you said that really well. It's like you have a reciprocating thing that's going on between you and God, and that is so comforting. I mean, it makes you feel so alive to God, you know, when that's happening, and because you see the crazy pieces of your world, how they fit in with God's world, because they are like really crazy pieces. Okay, so Psalms, a new song, right? Okay, I thought about this psalm, and I thought, I need to write a chorus. So you don't know this, I don't think. I've rarely sang this at all, but it's kind of like a personal thing. So I'm going to teach you the chorus right now. Bow, heavens, bow, come down, my Lord. Touch mountains, touch. That was my new song, watching him sing that new song. Now, one of the things that's fun about, and I love this about Pulse, I love this about hymns, I love this about our worship here, is like music is a big part of making my heart sing. It's just really a good thing. But you know what I really like to do? And Andy, would you come up here? Andy, have you ever heard the song before? Yeah, I didn't think so. But what I really love to do is I love to join together with other people, not just in singing, but with our gifts. So when I watch you guys singing on Sundays, it's kind of like, I like doing that together because that's the together part. And what I love about Andy is he is so, you know, like if I asked Bernie to come up, and she plays piano pretty well, if I asked Bernie to come up and said, hey, Bernie, would you play this with me? She'd go, no way. In fact, I've tried it, so I know she would say no way. But Andy, he doesn't have that gifting. He has a different kind of gifting, right? And he can't read the notes, like he said. So stand together, and when we get to the chorus, you can sing this. But this is my whole new song out of... Thank you.
starts playing, I start playing totally differently. Because he starts carrying things in the song that I can't carry all of it, and I have to play differently to carry the mood of the song. He starts doing that, that frees me up to do other things, which is what I love about how the body works together. Because when we see each other engaging in good deeds and doing it together, it's a really cool thing. And that leads to the chorus. And you know this. Of course, the psalm is longer, so it needed two verses, right? Blessed situation, the people of the Lord. Shield and refuge for all who believe his word. Subdue your people under your mighty hand. What is man, O God of Israel? Bow, heavens, bow. Come down, my Lord. Touch, mountains, touch. Alone no more. Subdue the people under your mighty hand. What is man, O God of Israel? There you go. Awake. Awaken. 2 Peter chapter 1. I was reading this, verses 12 through 15, and it talks about that whole idea about he wants to stir them up by way of reminder. I looked up the word stir up. It means to wake up. Why is that? Because Peter was talking to people he had already taught. He taught them everything he knew. And what was happening? They were falling asleep. Why were they falling asleep? Because that's the nature of being human, is to fall asleep. But when God wakes us up, when God wakes us up. And remember, it's better to be hot or cold. It's when we're lukewarm that we get spit out of God's mouth. His words, not mine.